We're back. How's everybody doing? Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, ChicagoJazz.com, and welcome to Chicago Music Revealed. We are back here. We took a couple of days off because schedule will be in a little bit for a great Friday show. Of course, this is our Blues in Chicago and Beyond show. There's the end of my theme song. Thank you, Craig Hello, for the theme song. Of course, this is Blues in Chicago Day, and we have got a legend on the show today. Of course, Dave Katzman is going to be co-hosting with me in 1 second. I'll bring him on. But Billy Branch is joining us. He's got a couple of virtual concerts coming up and a whole lot of stuff going on, as usual. During all of this COVID-19 stuff, he's always finding a way to work and find a way to get out there. So it's going to be fun to talk to Billy. We're going to bring him on in 1 second. Also wanted to let everybody know, head over to Chicago Music Revealed. We're going to have all of the guests for next week up and running and getting online. Of course, you can see all the past episodes at ChicagoMusicRevealed.com. And I should also mention, I'm also the director of programming and entertainment at the soon-to-be-opening Epiphany Center for the Arts right there on Ashland and Adams. We're going to be announcing a full fall schedule with very limited seating because we're going to be conscious of phase four, COVID seating and safety measures. But we are going to do stuff there, fingers crossed, assuming nothing happens, starting in September. So we're going to start announcing lineups and start announcing musicians there. And we're also going to be putting out and announcing in the next 3 weeks a live streaming platform that we're going to be doing over there as well. So stay tuned for all that. EpiphanyShy.com for all the information. And I got a plug out, so bring Billy and Dave Katzman on. And Billy, thanks so much for taking a few minutes today and jumping on with us. It's a pleasure to have you on the show. And how are you holding up during all of this COVID-19 situation?
Yeah, thanks, Mike, for inviting me. Hanging in here pretty good. I was just telling my wife, I said, I'm virtually busy as hell. So, you know, we're still doing things. We did a live broadcast. We did a virtual Roses show last weekend. Mm-hmm. And we've got some stuff coming up, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
Yep.
And, you know, it's, of course, it's unfortunate we can't interact with audiences, but as they say, the show must go on. So
that's right.
You know, most of my buddies and, you know, a lot of musicians are still pretty active, do virtual, either from home or from a audience-less venue.
Well, you know, at this time of year, I mean, you're swamped. You're playing every single night of the week. And I can remember last year I had you on the show when we were over at the hot dog stand here in Bridgeport, and you were on for a few minutes and we were talking about a lot of stuff. You were doing like 6 or 7 hits over Blues Fest weekend, including playing at the Blues Fest and all of that stuff. So I know this is a switch, but I know when we talked last year, you're really into technology anyway. So this kind of falls in. You don't have much of a learning curve with the technology standpoint. So I would imagine you're probably finding little ways and little niches that to connect with a larger audience these days that you just didn't have time to do, but that you knew how to do, right?
Right. It feels like I haven't slowed down. You know, I'm sure you're aware of, you know, it's an eerie situation with this COVID because time is like, meaning is diffused, you know. I mean, you look around, we say, is it the weekend already?
I know.
Again, we don't have the schedule in terms of, you know, being there with our press. But yeah, I've been doing quite a few things, you know, and some of my buddies, they want to do some videos, some of them to speak to some of the things that are going on in the current events, you know, the Black Lives Matter struggle, of course.
Yep.
And along with this COVID epidemic. So there's a lot to address, you know, there's no dearth of song material. That's for sure.
That's for sure. Let me bring up a couple of virtual things that you're doing, and then I'll let Dave Katzman take the reins a little bit. But you are doing something for the Greater Food Depository that's going to be on June 18th. We actually had Liz Mandeville on earlier this week talking about this performance, and you're also going to be on this as well. They're taking some of your past videos. They're going to play a performance video too as part of this Greater Food Depository. Of course, some of the other people on this is Jim Peterick, Dennis DeYoung. It's all going to be available on ChicagoEvents.com, so you can get all the info there. But then also, Blues on the Fox, even though they can't do it in person this year, they are going to be hosting a virtual festival. And the good news with Blues on the Fox, they're tied in with the Paramount Arts Center out there in Aurora. So you're going to actually have the band socially distant on stage on June 20th at 8 p.m. doing a live set from the performance venue. Nobody can be there, but you can watch it on their Facebook page. So it's Blues on the Fox Facebook page, and we'll link everything up below. Well, that has to be pretty exciting. Is that going to be one of your the first times you've played with the whole band since this whole thing's happened?
We used the whole band for the Roses broadcast.
Oh, that's right.
But this will be probably a lot different because it's going to be in, as you know, a bigger venue. And hopefully it'll be a good setting in order to do this. You know, with Roses, we still had to, we were a little confined, so we had to take a lot of precaution to keep the social distancing, you know, because the stage is only so big.
Right.
So in that situation, I'm actually standing off the stage, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And behind me.
Well, the Paramount Arts Center, and Dave knows about this too, and I know you've played there as well. It's a beautiful center. It's a large space, and they have like state-of-the-art equipment. So this should look like a great concert. Of course, you can check out Billy and the band June 20th, 8 p.m. as part of the Blues on the Fox live stream there. And Dave, I'm going to turn it over to you here, and you've only known each other forever, so I'm going to get out of the way and let you guys just kind of touch base and talk about everything you need to talk about.
Okay. It's good. It's really good to see you, man. Billy and I don't know.
You too.
35. At least 35 years, maybe more. I don't even remember when I met you. But, you know,
right.
You have now grown as we've all gotten older. I mean, you and I met when we didn't have any gray hair or anything. But I remember.
I had long hair.
I had longer hair, too. But, you know, you kind of younger guys on the scene when I met you, and you know there was a wealth of amazing harmonica players back then, and I know that you spent a lot of time around Junior Wells and Kerry Bell, two people I worked with many times over the years. But how has people grown into being the elder now and keeping the history alive, you know? And you know, I know you've done a lot of work on the Little Walter stuff, your last album, you know, Roots and Branches. I personally think it's really important for us, I guess we're the elders now, to really tell the young people where it came from. And you're doing an amazing job, but I just want you to kind of talk about that and what it means to you, you know?
Well, yeah, you're right, Dave. When I first began, I was part of what was called the new generation of Chicago blues. And that started 1977 was when we formed the Sons of Blues. Our very first performance was at the Berlin Jazz Festival, accompanied by Willie, and who had just joined his band as well shortly before that, maybe a year before that. But in that case, there were 15 of us assembled by Jim and Amy O'Neill, the founders of Living Blues magazine. And they were commissioned by George Grunz, the director of the producer of the Berlin Jazz Festival. And the question was, are there any young African-American artists playing blues? So they assembled us. And 15 of us performed on the Berlin Jazz Festival stage, and which at that time, the Berlin Jazz Festival was probably the largest music festival in Europe at that time. I don't know if Montreux was going. I'd have to check. I have to research that. But this is the first time blues have been presented, or at least in such a large magnitude, you know. So we were called the new generation of Chicago blues, and it was a tremendous success. You can watch part of that performance. There's a documentary on YouTube. There's two cuts of it. One is, it says, Willie Dixon, I Am the Blues, and Willie Dixon with the New Blues Generation. It's very interesting documentary. But at any rate, so that was everyone in the Sons of Blues, except for myself, was the son of a famous blues man. So we had Lurie Bell, Carrie's son. We had Freddie Dixon, Willie's son. And we had Garland Whiteside, who was the son of Clifton James, who was Willie Dixon's drummer and Bo Diddley's original drummer. So hence the name, the Sons of Blues. I came up with the name. I was the only one who wasn't the son of a famous blues musician. But that being said, we, you know, after those years, you know, I've kept the name, the Sons of Blues, and the personnel has changed over the years. And my goal was always to preserve the integrity of the Chicago blues, as well as having a contemporary edge. So in other words, on any given night, you might hear Muddy Waters or Sonny Boy Williamson or Lil Walter, but then you might hear some Temptations or some funky stuff, you know? And we have always, even to this day. So I think that it is really important to preserve the legacy of what we call the classic Chicago blues, because as you well know, just about all of those greats have left us. They've yes, gone
they,
on.
Yep. Yes, they
they've
have.
Gone. And as you mentioned, Dave, I had the benefit and the wonderful opportunity have known, played, and recorded with so many of them. You know, I mean, you think about the days when it was nothing. You go out seven nights a week, you'll see Otis Rush, Coco Taylor, James Cotton, Junior Wells, Buddy Guy, Lefty Diz, Big Walter Horton, on and on. I mean, just dozens and dozens of just legendary figures. And now you look around, and the guys that we used to hang together during those days, we look on those memories, you know, with fond memories, but there's a sadness because they're not there, you right. know, and when you're 20 or in your teens, because I first started going into Teresa's nightclub at about age 19 and all the other clubs. You know, you think somebody who's 40 is old. And now I've outlived some of my heroes and my idols. I've outlived them. You know, of course, the main guys I learned from were Junior Wells, Carrie Bell, James Cotton, and Big Walter Horton. I spent a lot of time with all of them, but probably the most time was with Carrie Bell due to my friendship and being in the band with Lurie, you know. So we spent a lot of time, but there were just so many greats. Names you may or may not, there was harmonica players like One Arm John Wrencher, and there's Big Leon Brooks.
I ever saw John Wrencher.
Yeah, Big Leon Brooks and Good Rockin' Charles and Necktie Nate, and of course there was the inimitable, ubiquitous Lefty Diz, was the cat that was kind of like the bridge between his generation and our. Diz was the hippest cat on, you know, everybody. A lot of guys acknowledged that Diz was the guy that reached his hand out to us younger folks at the time.
I'll go with that. Yeah, I mean, back in the day, like you said, any night of the week. And the other side of it, the people that weren't working would go hang out with the people who were working.
Right, exactly.
One night, Wise Fools, it was a Mighty Joe Young date, and on stage was Lonnie Brooks, Buddy Guy, Mighty Joe, Sun Seals, and one other guitar player. And there were like 20 people in the audience, and I knew I was seeing the best blues guitar in one grouping that I'd ever seen, ever. And it came through. But, you know, when, you know, I appreciate the people who have opened blues up to a wider audience, but that was really needs to know the history. And you know, hear people like you, and if I can tell any stories to anybody or anything, I'd give them an insight to it. I mean, just even Maxwell Street, the magic of magic. You know, it's so important, and that the youth of Chicago learn that they own this music, that this is their heritage. And you know, you've done blues in the schools for years. Is there anything going on virtually with that at this point, or is there going to be?
Funny that you mention that. Just yesterday, the last 2 days, I did virtual classes as part of the Pine Top Memorial Workshop. Right. I just did my second class. We did two virtual classes. We did Wednesday and Thursday. So we did have that, and it was very well received. It had its challenges because, and as you mentioned, you know, I've been the longest blues in schools teacher. I started in 1978, and I still do it.
Wow.
And I started in Chicago and then started traveling nationally, and now I've done it globally. Just 3 years ago, we're in the Andes Mountains. Wow. I'm teaching my classes in Spanish.
Wow.
I'm teaching harmonica in the Andes Mountains of Ecuador.
That's wild.
And believe it or not, there were kids there that were trying to play like Little Walter. In China, I was in China twice in the last 3 years, and they got a Little Walter harmonica school in China, man, and not even in Beijing, in a smaller province. But so we did have those virtual workshops, and like I said, they were a little bit challenging because, you know, it's not the same as having the presence of the students in the room and the interaction and, you know, trying to play together is almost impossible because of the lag, you know.
Right.
But we managed to somehow have a good, you know, we had a good time. I think everyone said they enjoyed it.
Is the Chicago Public Schools doing anything virtually with you at all? Or are they still doing the
program? Not yet. Okay. Yeah, no, I haven't done anything with the Chicago Public Schools.
You know, that's something interesting to me too, because Billy, you brought up all these different countries with all these kids are connected with the blues and stuff. But like right here in Chicago, are you seeing a lot of young musicians coming up and getting into the blues? I'm noticing there's more in the past, like 5-6 years, younger musicians getting into the blues. And really, I mean, you're really starting to tear it up. I mean, it's almost like a new wave. What are you seeing?
I agree with you.
Yeah.
There seems to be a slow but growing interest among the youth. And for example, in the class I just talked to you about, man, it tripped me out because I had 2 12-year-olds playing harmonica. And I said, how long have you been playing? You know, I did a little interview with them. Well, both of them have been playing about 6 years.
Wow.
And they could play. One of them was a little girl, and one of them a boy calls himself Mighty Mike, and he's got YouTube videos. And I went, we looked, it just tripped us out. We're looking to hear this cat is up there directing the band, singing Junior Wells and messing with the kid, and introducing the band like he's been doing this 30 years. It's tripping me out. But you're right. There seems to be a slow but steady influx of young people. I'm also very encouraged by the influx of the young African Americans, because as you're probably aware, we haven't seen much of that, which is so ironic since it was originally an African American art form.
Absolutely.
And so I'm encouraged, you know, like Kingfish, and then we have Jemiah here. We have Melody Angel here. We have, you know, a few folks, and then around the country, John Tavius Willis, and there's the Southern Avenue, and then there's this, you know, so people are starting to figure out that there's more to this music than they might have initially thought.
Do you think
it's not looked at as their parents' music either? You know,
yeah,
right.
There,
when we were younger, a lot of African Americans kind of rejected it and only wanted to be involved in soul and funk. But with things
which is still the case to a large degree,
right? But you know, the artists you mentioned that are doing great, and that doesn't seem to be part of the formula. You know, it doesn't seem part of they think about themselves instead.
Well, and you know, I did interesting because you're doing so much education, and then, you know, Fernando's doing so much stuff, and there's so much connection now. Do you think that there this influx of like a new generation of blues musicians coming in, it's because there's so much outreach and there's so many different ways that you, as someone like an elder statesman, is actually able to connect with somebody? You know, from yourself, I'm sure you had one person all of a sudden they said one thing to you or let you sit in or something that inspired you to start learning a ton of stuff or really get into the music. There's so much ability for these younger guys to engage with somebody like you now. That's got to be inspiring, and that's got to really help to grow everything from a blues standpoint in the younger generation, right? It means a lot to be able to connect with somebody.
It really does, Mike. Look, I have, as I mentioned, okay, my first Blues in Schools residency was in 1978. From that very first residency, some of those former kids are still in touch with me.
Wow.
Still come out to the club. They got grandkids. And their kids know about the blues. They have some of the most heartfelt, inspiring letters and testimony. I even got a message from when I did a Blues in Schools in Antwerp, Germany, 25 years ago. Kid says, "You remember me? I was in," and that was a very, I've got stories, man. I could do an hour of stories about Blues in school. But I had a situation where I had in Antwerp, Belgium, I had Kosovo and Albanian refugee kids.
Oh, man.
And they were called latchkey kids. They were called garbage kids. I had two schools. One was an art school, well-funded, prim and proper. But the other one was like the throwaway kids, you know, the kids that nobody, but these kids from day one, when I went in, they were with me. They wanted to, because we did a show and combined the two schools, and I'd come go to the one school, the artsy school first, then we go to the second one. Giles Corey was my guitar player then, and he's back with me now. It was just me and Giles instructed. And we arrive at the second school, and they say, "Bill, you're late. We got to rehearse, man. We got to get our show together." But I tell you, these kids, what was interesting about that, the very first day we met them, first thing, now they had a gourmet restaurant in which they could learn every aspect of the restaurant business. One was the maitre d', some were doing the cooking, some were doing the waiting. And then, so we had these nice lunches every, but then the first day we walked by like the wood shop, machine shop, and they got Cop Killer blasting on boomboxes. Cop Killer, yeah. So then we go for the first introductory meeting. And the first school, the art school, is just a piece of, it was so smooth. We go to the next one. These kids are at their desks. It was about 25 of them, and about 20 of them all had cigarettes cocked like that. They're smoking in class. They're looking at me like, yeah, you gonna tell me something? So I looked at Giles, and I had my notes, and I just dropped them on the floor. I said, look here, kids. Now, if you don't want to be here, you're free to go. It's okay. We're not forcing you. And so I gave my presentation. We played. And I expected when we come back the next day that most of them would be gone. Every single one of them was there, man. Every single one. And they lasted throughout. This was a two-week program. They hung in there every day for 2 weeks. And the teacher said, in that school situation, they were only required to attend, say, 3 out of 5 days. And they said most of the time the kids wouldn't show up for those 3 days. Well, when we were there, they showed up 5 days a week.
Wow.
They did.
Yeah, they had to feel great.
Yeah, I had a kid. His name, I never forget, his name was Urkel. They said, Bill, this is Urkel. He can rap in Turkish. I said, bull. I said, let me hear it. And we went into a Turkish rap. I said, okay, cool. We're going to use that in the show. A few days later, I noticed Urkel wasn't there. I said, hey, man, what happened to Urkel? Oh, he flashed a gun at the teacher, so he's kicked out.
Oh, jeez.
So anyway, yeah, man.
Well, you guys have a ton of history together. Do you remember the first time you guys met, Dave? I mean, when did you guys first connect?
Oh, my God. Probably Wise Fools or Alice's Revisited back in the 70s. You know, I can't even remember, man. Can you, Bill?
Yeah, I wouldn't know. Now, I went to Alice's, Dave, but I don't think we knew each other in Alice's. But, yeah, because Alice's was one of the first white blues clubs.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was one of the first ones. Yeah, yeah, Alice, right under the L track. Every time I go to Kingston Mines, I pass by. I say, good old Alice's.
Yeah,
Alice's.
Times there.
Yeah, you'd see everybody, man. You'd see the greats down at Alice's.
I probably got to know you in the 80s, early 80s.
Yeah.
And so, we've worked together a million times. I mean,
right. Right, Dave was doing the sound down at Buddy's, and we were playing there all the time.
Yeah, I did that for 21 years.
Well, I find it interesting because, you know, Chicago, there's such legendary blues clubs that are no longer here right now. And now it's, you know, and of course, with this whole pandemic situation, you know, God willing, all of them come back. But I think we're going to lose a few, too, during this whole situation, during the venues. But, I mean, you know, Chicago is just known for the blues. I mean, the historic clubs, it's a shame that a lot of them couldn't be preserved or saved or anything like that. But what were some of the main clubs that you guys came up in that you know, you had to be in, you had to hit, you had to be there, because that's where the legends were playing of your time, and you guys got a chance to see them in these small little clubs. I mean, they'd go and tour Europe, right, and sell out big, gigantic theaters. But here, you know, Howlin' Wolf is sitting in a small club, right? So what were some of those clubs that the people that are watching and listening right now might find pretty interesting to know, and they might not even know about?
Well, there were,
well,
there were just, well, I mean, Teresa's, you go on.
Yeah.
With that.
Teresa's. And I that's my opening line in my song on off of Harbor Tech, New Kid on the Block. Down at Teresa's, the music would never stop. When I was a young kid, when I was a young boy, the new kid on the block. Teresa's was like Junior Wells' home base. He didn't own it, but that was his home court. And Teresa was tough, nice looking, but no nonsense. She didn't take no mess. Mark Pokempner, the photographer, did a photo compilation of shots from Teresa's. It's called, yeah, Down at Teresa's. He took that from my from the opening line from a song. And included there is a shot of me and Junior Wells Jr. standing over me, and I'm sitting on a crate, and he's looked like he's instructing me, and the caption says, time, time, time. I don't remember what I wouldn't even remember that if Mark hadn't captured that shot. But I was there so many, not, like I said, I was going into clubs at 18, 19 years old. They didn't card you. They didn't care. And Teresa's, you could see Lefty Diz, the Aces, Lewis, Dave Myers, B-Lo, Queen Sylvia, Mary Lane, all kinds of folks. Then there was the checkerboard, which Buddy Guy had. And then there was the Queen Bee Lounge, which later became Lee's Unleaded. That was on South 74th in South Chicago.
Yep.
There was Florence's Lounge, what Hound Dog used to play on Matinee, 55th and Shields in the afternoon. There was
Street. Mother's Blues? Mother Blue?
Was Mother's that? Blues?
On Wells Street.
On Wells, yeah. Mother's, I didn't go there. There was a Mother's on the South Side, which wasn't a blues club, but we played there years. And then what we did as the Sons of Blues was kind of unique because we played in a series of neighborhood black bars that weren't blues clubs. As a matter of fact, sometime when we first went in, the customers would turn their noses up at us because I don't want to hear no blues. I like jazz. But within about 3 or 4 weeks, we had them every time because we were laying it down so tough, they couldn't deny it. So the club that, Dave, you came to Artists, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I played with you at Artists.
Yeah.
I had a
Monday night gig, 87 in Kimbark, for 27 years straight.
Wow.
Every Monday.
27 years. And that's up to only 6 years ago when they ultimately closed. Artist died about 4 or 5 years ago. Her husband, Clarence, just died 2 years ago or last year. And that was like the Cheers of the blues. Like, you walked in and you just immediately felt welcome. And it was no cover charge. And we do what we wanted to do. We take a break, sometimes longer than our set. Nobody tell you anything, except if artist said, Billy, get up there and hit it. I got all my drinks free. That was part of my pay because we didn't make much money, that's for sure. But it was the best time. Over the years, some greats came through. I had Eddie Kendricks from the Temptations sit in and play Just My Imagination.
Oh, wow.
At Artists. I had Mavis Staples come on my 60th birthday and sing I'll Take You There with the band.
I was there.
That was some great memories.
Some other clubs, too. Up north, there was Biddy Mulligan's.
Wise Fools.
Wise Fools. Alice's Revisited. There was a club on Granville, a biker club that Johnny Winter used to play at all the time. I forget the name of it. There was Minstrels out northwest.
By the way, Lynn Orman chimed in and she says Jerry's Palm Tavern.
Oh, yeah. Jerry's.
Jerry's. See, now Jerry's didn't really. Now that's a whole nother. Now you open up a new can of worms. Hey, Lynn.
Hi, Lynn.
That's our girl. Because I wrote a song about that. And Jerry, let me give you this in a nutshell. Jerry's Palm Tavern was a legendary bar that had been there over 50 years. And in its heyday, the patrons were every major black and a significant number of white entertainers. So You could go on to Jerry's Palm Tavern and see Sammy Davis Jr. Or Duke Ellington or Count Basie or Billie Holiday. Everybody went there. And I wrote a song because, unfortunately, due to politics, Jerry was closed down. The place ultimately was destroyed. It's a beautiful song off of my album, Blue Shock. It's accessible on YouTube. The song is called Going to See Miss Jerry, G-E-R-R-I, One More Time. And it's a beautiful video. And so Jerry's Palm Tavern was located in the heart of Bronzeville, 47, just off of King Drive, which back in the day would have been South Park. But it was a pivotal stop. It was, for the Black community at large. And it was also the hangout for the entertainers at the Regal Theater, which was right around the corner. Now, the Regal, of course, is best way to describe it for those who don't know, would be Chicago's Apollo Theater.
Yeah, yep.
And where you had the top name tier of all the Black entertainers. You know, B.B. King had Live at the Regal, so you could see James Brown, the Miracles, everybody played at the Regal, but they would hang out at Jerry's Palm Tavern. You know, Jerry's Palm Tavern was never a blues bar. Mm-hmm. I'm still in touch with Jerry. I've seen her. After they closed her down, she moved into a nursing home here in Chicago. Eventually went back to her birthplace, Jackson, Mississippi. She now resides in Los Angeles. She's in a nursing. Rosa and I saw her the year before last. She's 101 years old. Right.
Wow.
You were very you were very close.
Yeah. She would call me her son. That's how I got.
It was a real classy joint.
yeah.
Nice.
Well, back in the heyday, it really was. It was the spot. It was the spot to be seen. That's mm-hmm. what you would go there to be seen, or go just to see who's going to show up. When Joe Louis won the heavyweight champion, he went to Jerry's Palm Tavern to celebrate.
Wow.
Yeah,
that was
it just seethed with history. You feel it when you walked in. She was a fellow Buddhist also.
yeah. I didn't know you're Buddhist, but you're exactly right.
Yep.
And she don't let that sweet demeanor fool you.
Oh,
Jerry. You get on the wrong side of Jerry. I was glad that she called me her son. But I saw her the other side, and that's the side you didn't want to be on.
Well, before we wrap it up, Dave, you got anything else for Billy before we wrap it up? Because this has been a great conversation.
It's great talking to you, Bill. I haven't talked to you in more than 3 months.
Yeah. You too, man.
Thanks for coming on. No, I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah.
Well, hey, so let me wrap this up with Billy. I want to make sure I do the last plugs here. So we've got, you're going to be part of the virtual festival that's going to be benefiting the Greater Food Depository. Of course, that's happening June 18th at 7 p.m. They're going to be using one of your past videos. So that's going to be great to be part of that, along with Jim Peterick and Dennis DeYoung and a whole host of other musicians. And then, of course, you're going to be doing a live set on June 20th at 8 p.m., part of the Blues on the Fox Virtual Festival, and that's going to be available on Blues on the Fox Facebook page, and we're going to link everything up below. And, you know, I know that you've got some tours coming up in the fall, potentially going to Europe and everything, so fingers are crossed that you're going to make it over there. And
keep your fingers.
Yeah, hopefully everything starts to kind of chill out. But, you know, I know everybody can head over to your website, billybranch.com, but also they can check everything out on all of your virtual and Facebook pages and all that stuff to keep up to date with everything you've got coming up virtually, right?
Right. Yeah, thanks, Mike. We were knocked at, you know, I scheduled for two appearances at the Chicago Blues Fest, one with the Sons of Blues. And then Jimmy Johnson and I were to do a duet at the on the main stage. And believe it or not, we had a historic three-week tour of China planned for March and April. This was going to be the first time an American-based blues band had done such an extensive tour of China.
Wow.
And but it's, you know, all is not lost. We're hopefully we're going to reschedule.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that'll be incredible. That'll be incredible when you can do that. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I appreciate you jumping on. I mean, congratulations on all the virtual stuff you've got going on. I know you always have the incredible stuff going on. And hopefully we'll catch back up with you as things start to calm down. Maybe we'll get an update once you can actually play and people can go see Billy live and in person. What a concept that would be, isn't it?
Yeah, wouldn't that be a great thing to happen?
Yeah, right.
We'll be gigging some out there one of these days.
Yeah, right. All right. Well, hey, thanks for being on, Billy. I really appreciate it. And have a great weekend.
All right, you. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you, Cats Man. All right, peace.
All right, Dave. Well, hey, what a show. And I'm gonna try to. I'm probably gonna lose you if I. There we go. I can keep you. There we go. Hey, there you are. All right. Now that was a fun show, man. Billy, I love Billy. Obviously, he's like a legend. He's a Blues Hall of Famer and all that good stuff. And you guys' connection is awesome. So it was fun to hear you guys go back and forth. Before we wrap this whole thing up, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you if you have any blues notes or anything we need to talk about, or if we covered a lot of ground with Billy, man. I don't think we have to cover anything else.
I don't think I can add anything to that, actually. working on some things. Hopefully, I can't say right now, but we're going to have a pretty cool guest next week.
Yep.
You know, I'm waiting to hear back and a confirmation, but this is, I just got to say, this project's a lot of fun, Mike.
I'm glad we're doing this. We're covering blues, I think, more thoroughly than I thought we would be covering blues on Friday. So this really works out well, and I like the two-host scenario here on Fridays, because I can take myself off screen and chill out, and I never get to do that normally. So sometimes I just turn it all over to you, man. So
I don't mind it, man. Thank you.
All right, so I'm going to close out the show. Dave, I'm going to take you off. We'll close that out. It was great seeing you, and thanks again for being on and helping out. We'll see you back next Friday, and we'll announce who the guest is on Monday, hopefully. So have a good weekend.
You too. Take it easy. Stay healthy.
Yes, you too.
Okay.
All right. So what a show that was, man. We could have talked to Billy for like two more hours. I mean, the stories he's got, the people that he has played with and known. And, you know, I did an interview with him and Little Walter's daughter at Johnny O's last year as part of the Chicago Blues Festival preview shows. And we were only going to do 20 minutes. He and I and Little Walter's daughter ended up talking for an hour and a half. And that video is up on our YouTube channel. Actually, only half of the video is up on the YouTube channel. I've got another half that we should actually release. We never released it, I don't think. So, well, anyways, incredible, incredible stories, incredible player. If you get a chance, go check out BillyBranch.com. Of course, go to his Facebook page, go to all of his social media, and you can check him out, of course, June 18th at 7 p.m. on ChicagoEvents.com. You can see the virtual summer music festival that's happening there to benefit the Greater Chicago Food Depository. And then, of course, on June 20th, 8 p.m., the band's going to be live playing at the Paramount Theater in Aurora, playing live, socially distant from each other. It's going to be incredible. Check all that stuff out. And I'm just happy we made it to Friday. I apologize. I missed a couple of days this week. I was just overwhelmed with a lot of projects that are happening, all very good, all very exciting, but I needed to take a couple of days to chill out. But next week, we've got it all planned out. It's booked up, so stay tuned. We're going to announce all of that tomorrow on ChicagoMusicRevealed.com, and we're going to put up all of the live event posts so you can be sure to set your reminders. Of course, as I always say, I appreciate everyone watching. I appreciate everyone commenting, sharing, liking. Give us some hearts. Give us some thumbs up. If you like what you hear, like what you're seeing, please share this. Tell your friends. Tell your neighbors. Call the grandkids. Chicago Music Revealed, right back here on Monday, episode 53, I believe. We will see you then. Stay safe, stay healthy, and until next time, I'll see you Monday.